Today's daf brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh in Masechet Shabbat is daf Kuf Hey, which is quite remarkable. My gosh, how did we get there so fast? We're starting at daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beit. We got up to we're at the bottom over there at Tana, four lines up, first word, four lines up from the bottom. And we were talking about Ktiva. What is the shear of Ktiva? So Tana. So the shear that we had given for writing was to write two letters. And here, very strangely, it says, if you fix even one letter, you would be chayav. Ask the Gemara, that makes no sense. I mean, if even ashtakatav otechat patur higia otechat chayav, for writing it, you'd be potter. How could you be chayav just for fixing it? Omar Rav Sheshet, hocha b'mayaskinan. Well, Yaakov, please mute yourself. What we need to do over here, so what you did is, in order to fix the letter, you took off the top of the chet, which connects the two zions from which the chet is made, and therefore you ended up fixing two letters. And that's what you needed, was two zions. Rav Amar, you don't have to say that at all. Even fixing a single letter, if that's what is needed for the sefer to be usable, then that is, of course, choshev in and of itself. So even if you were just went ahead and you took off the extra top of the gag of the dalet, which we're calling tagoshel dalet here, that doesn't quite mean the way we usually use tag, and reish, you needed to have a reish, and instead they wrote a dalet. So you take off a little piece of the reish that was made it look like a dalet, and you turned it back into a resh, which is what it was supposed to be. Tana, nitkavin lichtov ot achat. Now, there's a strange braita that says if what you intended to do was to write one letter, and instead you ended up writing two otiot, you would be chayev. So the case would be, like we had before, you were going to write a chet, you ended up writing two zions, you never put the top over it connecting the two zions, so you ended up with two otiot. Ask the Gemara, how could you say you're chayev? Before the case that we had was, v'otanan yubi potter. Lokasha, adabai ziyune, hodaloboy ziyune. Depends what we're talking about. Do we need still the little zions on top, which are the tagin on top? So you need to have those three zion-shaped tagim that you would put on the top of the zions. So normally, if you're going to have a chet, which over here is what you were planning on making, then your zions do not have ziyuni on them. And because of that, if you didn't have ziyuni, ches is not one of the osios that normally have ziyuni. So then that means if you were going to write a ches and you ended up with two zions, then it's highly unlikely that you put ziyuni on them. So in that case, they're not completed yet. And because your intent was to write the letter that's correctly written. Masha Enken, we were talking about the Braisa, is where you don't need to have Ziyune, or you had no intention to have Ziyune, or the Ziyune were already on them, or you wrote two letters that never require Ziyune, whatever the case is, then you would be Chayev, because you completed the letters. Katav Ot Echat Notrikun, and the Mishnah added that if you write one letter with a little apostrophe, which indicates that it's meant to be read as a Notrikun, and not just as a letter. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Betera mechayev v'cham chamim potrim. Ask the Gemara, this idea of an abbreviation, it's called a notrikun, is used in many ways. We use it in the Gemara, notrikun in the sense of a one-letter abbreviation for a whole word, which is the way we're using it here. But we also use it as an acronym. For the word for acronyms for us are also the notrikun. So that we can have a long word which says something, but it's really comprised of letters where each letter is indicating something that lies behind that letter, and that if somebody knows what you really mean, he understands the entire idea. Many of these acronyms, of course, end up becoming words on themselves. Nobody even knows what they stand for anymore. But Lamaisa, they are still called notrikuns. So where do we see that kind of thing? Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosi ben Zimra. Where do we see a loshen notrikun min haTorah? Well, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram Avinu, Av Hamon Goyim Netaticha. So I have made you an Av Hamon. What is the Hamon over there? Instead of just Av Hagoyim. Hamon Goyim basically stands for a different ways of looking at Avram Avinu's Gedula. So you start with the fact that you are an Av to the Goyim. And then furthermore, that's the Aleph. The Beis is, I made you a Bachur. You're the one who's been chosen among all of the nations. I also turn you into a Hey Mem Vav Nun, with a Hey, as we always darshan the Hey so far in the Sugya, as a Chet Chaviv Netaticha B'umot, you're the most loved among all of the nations, a Melech Netaticha B'umot, a Vatik Netaticha B'umot, I've made you the most Choshev in terms of noble and how you do things always right, and Ne'eman Netaticha L'umot, all of these are merumas in Av Hamon. Rabbi Yochanan did they, Omar? Rabbi Yochanan had his own favorite example of a notrikon, which is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha. The Anochi is not Ani Hashem Elokecha. The Anochi is saying something in that word itself. And it stands for Ana Nafshi Ketivat Yehivit. That I myself wrote you the Torah and handed it to you. The Rabbanan say, no, Anochi stands for Amira Ni'ima Ketiva Yehiva. I've given you something so sweet that I wrote to hand to you. And another explanation is that we should look at the Anochi as saying backwards, Yehiva Ketiva Ne'amanim Amareha. I gave this to you in writing, and you can trust everything in it completely. Hopefully, we'll avoid that sun there. Devei Rabbi Natan Omri. I got another good example. When the Malach was so angry at Bilam because he hit his donkey over there, his mule over there, he says to him, Yarat HaDerech L'Negdina. What exactly does that mean, Yarat HaDerech? I mean, is that stam that you, Bilam, were running against me because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that you could go? So in what sense is Yarat? So he was referring the Malach to what the animal had seen. Yara ra'ata natata. Your animal was very intelligent. It saw what was coming, and it was frightened, and therefore turned aside, and you're beating it for saving it your life. Devei Rabbi Yishmael Tana, you find it in another beautiful word. What's the pshat by the Omer that you're supposed to bring it as Carmel? What exactly does Carmel mean? I mean, it certainly doesn't mean caramel chocolates when you're bringing the Omer. So it's a strange way to refer to grain. What it means is carmale. It means that the grain of the Omer is meant to be so fresh that it's like a pillow that is filled up still with the moisture of the growing fresh grain. Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar, you find this in another way. When Melech David was telling on his deathbed, he was telling Shlomo that he can't allow Shimi ben Gera to get away with what he did. So he says to Shlomo, "Vuhu kilalani kilala nimretzet." What does that nimretzet mean? I mean, a kilala is bad enough, right? So the word nimretzet is actually a notrikun for all of the horrible things that Shimi had said about David HaMelech. So he said, first of all, he's a nun. He's a no-eif. He's an adulterer. He's a sex maniac. He's a Moavi. He's really, he's not even Jewish. He's a murderer because of what he did. He's Rotzeach because of what he did even though he didn't do it himself, but it was considered to be Ritzicha when he took Batsheva. And he's a Tzorer. He's an enemy of the nation. He's a Toeva. He's disgusting. Exactly what you would expect to hear about David HaMelech, who is the Ne'im Zmirot Yisrael. It's like incredible. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar, Ma Nidaber Uma Nitztadak. Now, obviously, when Yosef's brothers were telling him, yes, it's hopeless, what can we say? How can we justify ourselves? They were being merames on some level to exactly what it was that was real. I mean, they weren't just lying. So what they meant was nitztadak. Nun, tzadi, tez, dalet, kuf stands for nun. Nechonim anachnu. We are absolutely straight. Tzadikim anachnu. Tohorim anachnu, dakim anachnu, we're completely innocent, kedoshim anachnu. Those are all remozim to various notrikin. And now we have a remez to our Richie. You better be really on duty because you're going to be running quick here. Weren't you supposed to be practicing overnight? That's the way we left off. What was that sour? Nah. Sheesh. All right, well, you're going to have another chance very soon. And poor Doc has to gird himself for the Yiddish.
I'm trying to.
Okay. All right, so here is the Mishnah that closes the sugya. That we had started before with the Mishnah HaKotev Shtei Otiot Pahalama Achat, and we were wondering, what the heck is that all about? Obviously, that's the shear. If you don't do that, what do you do? Moshe, I think your camera is a little bit smushy over there. We can barely see you, unless just the light that's coming in behind you. So here we see why. Because the first Mishnah that says HaKotev Shtei Otiot Pahalama Achat is written in order to contrast it with the second Mishnah here, which is HaKotev Shtei Otiot B'Shtei Halamot, which leads to that very important sugya that has been haunting us over here for a while. And that's the question, again, if it's B'Shtei Halamot, would you possibly be chayev because you knew in between, and normally Yediyah is mechalek lechataot, as you'll recall, or since it's a chatzis shir, do we say ein Yediyah lechatzis shir? Here is at last the Mishnah of that machloket itself. So if you write two letters and there were two halamot, you write even one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Now Rashi says, well, what is that adding? What's the difference if it's one in the morning or one in the afternoon? So Rashi says, one in the morning and one in the afternoon is coming to add a big chiddush, which is that even if you didn't really know, but since there was so much time that elapsed between the first letter and the second letter, you could have found out that it was Shabbos in between. And therefore, it's considered to be a Yediya, even if it weren't a Yediya. Tosa says, that doesn't make sense, because we had before, if you wrote one letter in Tveria and one letter in Tzipori, I mean, you're telling me the time it takes to get from Tveria to Tzipori is not enough for you to find out that it's Shabbos? I don't know. So because of that, Tosfos learns that the only reason that it's saying achat shacharit v'achat bein harabayim is to tell me, even if it was not just that you found, you literally found out, but even if so much time passed between it. So you would think, okay, so then I mean to be mechaber two actions that have really nothing at all that interconnects them. Well, it's going to be mechaber, the first letter with the second letter. You knew that the first letter had been done by Israel. Oh, no, it's a chatzishir, but you knew about it. Now it's 20 hours later, and like we're going to magically put these two things together as if they're one, Maisav Ketiva. Afal Pikein, the only thing that is mechalik lechatat is not the time. What's mechalik lechatat is the yedia. And since it says, oh, hoda elav chatato, you have to know, chatato, the Rabbi Yishmael understands, Rabbi Gamliel understands to mean, the chiyuv chatat, not just that he sinned, but the chatato that he was chayiv. And over here, he never found out that there was hodai lav chatato because it was a chatzishir, and he indeed was not chayiv a chatas. Therefore, it's coming to tell me, even in this case, Rebbe Gamliel is mechayiv. The chachamim pater him, and again, we know what this is all about, as the Gemara explains, but my kamiflage, Rebbe Gamliel holds ein yediyah lechatzishiur, because he understands when the pasuk says, hodai lav chatato, it means the actual korban chatat. Was Rabban and Savre, Yesh Yediyah LaChatzishiur. Chatato means what it is that you did wrong. And over here, he knows what it is that he did wrong, even though it was not Mechayev him Echatas. And this leads us to Hadron Allah Habone. Thank you, Sir Richard. And now we get to our next amazing perek, and that is we are about to discuss the idea of ariga. Now, the thing that we do after we put together the krushim on the Mishkan. We write the letters on the krushim so that they're matched up properly and we can put them back together again. And we go next to make the vilonot. So we have to make now the various curtains that we put over the Mishkan, over the krushim, and that requires ariga. So we are going to have to do our weaving, and therefore we move on to weaving. Now, it's true that we discussed at the end of the Mishnah in Klal Gadol, we spoke beferish about the shear of ariga, but we repeat it over here because of the fact that it turns out that it's much more complex than we thought, because there's different shitot and different places where you have different shiurim. So even though we said ha'orek shnei chutin over there, we start here with Rebbe Eliezer. And Rebbe Eliezer omer, ha'orek shlosha chutin batchila. When you start the weave, it's only considered to be a davar ha'mitkayem if you've got three threads that you have put through of your weft threads at the beginning. But if you add one thread even to where you have been weaving, and now you've got that long piece of cloth, and you only put in one additional thread, you would be chayav for that alone. And that's achat al arig. We mentioned this before, benogea the sheet of Rebbe Eliezer when it came to writing, which according to him, if you wrote one letter and it was next to joining the other letters, then it would be considered to be chashav. Same thing is true. This is actually the makor. V'chachomim omrim. The Chachamim say it really makes no difference whether it's the beginning or it's adding to what it's already there. Now, halacha is bein batechila, bein besof, the shiur is always two threads, which is consistent with the Mishnah that we had before in Klal Gadol. Now, if you set up shtei batei nirin, whether you do this in nirin, whether you do this in a kiros, whether you do this in a sieve, in a sifter, in a basket weave, it's all chayev. Now, these are just giving us examples of the different ways in which we do this. So let's remember. What we've been talking about until now is the mechanical weaving, which we will always put up in a kerus. We're going to see that the kerus is a frame that holds in place permanent heddles. Remember, that was the picture that we had. So we've got this block. Let's say the block is 100 threads long. So you're going to have a minimum of two blocks in a machine. In each one of these blocks, there are, let's say, 100 nirin. What are these nirin? Well, they're basically a piece of metal with a tiny little hole, a loop, and then it comes down to the bottom. And you put 100 threads alternating, 1, 3, 5, 7, in one of them. And then you put 2, 4, 6, 8, Mr. Thread, I'm talking about the number of the thread, number 2, number 4, number 6, number 8, in the second block in alternating holes. Then when you move the blocks, the alternating threads are moved in opposite directions, and then you throw the buchiar, the shuttle, goes straight through that. And then you've got, when you pull it back down and you switch positions, you trap the thread of the weft between them, and then you got yourself a 200-thread-long kind of weave. You can even do all types of intricate patterns in this. And indeed, when the Gemara discusses the way in which they would weave the parochet, which had all kinds of intricate patterns, so in order to get those patterns, you have to alternate the heddles so that they move different threads at different times, so that way you can get the different patterns, right? So that's like, basically, it's building up the pixels on a screen. So each line has got different pixels that are lit up. I'm talking about now just using two, which would give you a black and white screen. If you want to do fancy colors and you want to do, let's say, your parochet in using all of these different colors, beautiful designs. So they use 72 different kiroses, which we'll see later on. Have other ways. We don't usually refer to them as a kiros, but we'll use the word kiros for the Mishnah. So these are frames that hold heddles. Okay, that's for the machine. The way, however, the first lashon in the Mishnah, which is not about a kiros, but it is about nirin, is very simple. The way that you would do this, if you don't have this whole machine, all that you've got is a pole. So you take two poles. On each one of these poles, again, let's pretend we've got 100 threads in up and 100 threads down, reversing. Okay, but let's keep it simple. So you want to have 10 threads going up, 10 threads going down. You're a woman in the house. You don't have a big machine. So what do you do? So what you do is you tie 10 strings hanging loosely off of one pole and 10 strings hanging loosely off of another pole. Then you tie to each one of the threads of your warp, you tie a loop around by hanging it from the pole, putting a loop, and then tying a little knot on top. And that traps every other warp thread on alternative poles. So again, you do thread number one, thread number three, and thread number five, and thread number seven that you tie a little loop around, leaving it enough, obviously not tightly, because it needs to be able to slide up and down as it's moving. And you do this to the other pole on thread number two and thread number four, thread number six. And then by moving the poles up and down, you end up being able to do a weave. That's actually tying the nearing. So you could be chayev for setting two of these nearing just as nearing, or as making them in the kirus, which is setting up your warp inside of the frame, or even if there is no frame. And there's just, we had the examples before of all the different types of basket weaves, where first you set up the let's say you're using reeds. So you set up the reeds in a pattern. I'm sure you all did this in camp when you were kids, right? You set up those little plastic things that you made the belts from, or what, or you made your key holders from. So first you set it up by putting the threads across each other. Then you bend the threads over and you twist them. So when you're going to be making a basket, what you do is you don't just use them by themselves to hold each other. You put another, which is the equivalent of putting through a weft thread, through the warp, you put another reed that's going to go around it, and then yet another reed, and you keep adding those reeds until you finally get one at the top that you pull tightly, and that was your Egyptian basket that we talked about in Kalim. That's the idea over here. So if you set up two of those with one weft going up and down the two warps and another one going the opposite direction, so now you've started an ariga that will not fall apart. If you now leave it there, we said the shir is to be mitkayim b'makom acher. We're talking about all of these processes that may take a long time. You're not going to complete the whole thing on Shabbos. So again, the shir of all of those things were, where did we learn this out from? Achas or mei achas. So that if you have enough that is mitkayim b'makom acher, I've done enough that it's not going to fall apart. When I come back, the screen lights up and says, welcome, you can continue from right where you were up to. And that allows me to continue my melacha. So it doesn't matter how you do this. Here we see the Mishnah is giving over the abstract concept of shtei batei nearin. So there may not even be any real nearin at all, such as in the case of making a sifter or something, right? The other shear that relates to this is after we do the weaving, we have to do the sewing. Because remember the Torah said, how do we do this? We make first five, which were four amot by 28 amot. Remember, we just had this before. We were trying to figure out how long the krashim, how exactly, how was the roof, and so on. And we have to then sew these five together and sew the other five together. And then we have the pretty little stars in the sky with the golden cufflinks that are going to go through the blue or dark blue space look of the actual loops in the Mishkan. Okay, so what's the shear for that? Hatofer shtei tefirot. So again, if you sew two stitches, and remember two stitches don't mean two stitches. They mean the idea of a stitch is in or out, not in and out. So it's a little bit confusing because we don't have a word in English for really a tefirah. Ha'koreya amanat litvor shtei tefirot. Or if you tear something that was sewn for the purpose of ultimately re-sewing, which we will discuss. Anyway, Kiyat Rav Yitzchak, so when Rav Yitzchak came to Bavel from Eretz Yisrael, he had in a braita a different way of saying Reb Eliezer Shita, and that Reb Eliezer never argued about needing three at the beginning. Reb Eliezer agreed with the Rabbanan about needing two at the beginning, and he was only arguing if you're adding one, then you're chayev, which sounds more reasonable. I mean, for there to be two completely separate, unrelated machlokas, and why would that be? Ask the Gemara, but I mean, we do have the gears in the Mishnah, Shalosh, and it's got to be consistent with Reb Eliezer Shita. How would you explain Reb Eliezer in the Braita versus Reb Eliezer in the Mishnah? Says the Gemara, it's very simple. Lokasha, it depends, doesn't it? I mean, it's obvious. It's going to depend always on the thickness of the threads, right? For two reasons. It's going to depend on the thickness of the threads in terms of the impact of doing something with two threads. I mean, if the threads are very thin, you're barely going to notice that any change took place if there's only two threads. But there's another thing that you need to take into consideration. Since over here the question is whether it's mitkayemet, wouldn't it depend on how coarse the threads are? Because if you've got something that's very coarse, it doesn't hold together unless you've got a bit more. Otherwise, it tends to unravel. Because it doesn't have that same level of tension when it's pulled tight as a thin thread does. And because of that, it's not quite clear which way we would go. Would we look more to the recognizable shiur, or would we look more towards the mitkayem? So we have two approaches. One thing is for sure, that the difference between the Mishnah and the Braita is in the thickness of the thread. So one of them is talking about thick threads, Ba'alime, and one is talking about thin threads. As far as the direction, that's machlokas. Some explain it one way. Amri lahagisa, and Amri lahagisa. How would you explain it in two ways? Well, it's simple. Amri lahagisa. Look, Alime, if you're using thick threads, then you're going to need three threads in order for there to be enough for it not to fall apart. So tlata lo satre, but just two threads. There's not enough pressure to hold it all together. Masha enken katine, even two threads would be sufficient not to fall apart, or you could say it in the opposite direction. If you've got thin threads, then only three make a noticeable difference. If you've got two threads, then you won't notice it. Masha enken, if you've got thick threads, so then even two are very noticeable. So again, this would depend on what we consider to be the primary factor in making the distinction between the cases in Reb Eliezer. Now, we have a braita that goes like this. Ha'orek shlosha chutim batechila. So when you start with three chutim, you'd be chayev, or one thread added to what is already there. This is similar to our Mishnah. You'd be chayev. Over here, it doesn't say divrei Reb Eliezer. It's a stam braita that is following the sheet of Reb Eliezer. V'chachomim omrim, as per our Mishnah, doesn't matter. Bein betchila, bein besof, the always, the shear is shnei chutim. Now, how about when you get to the edge? Now, usually, now remember that when we're talking about two chutim, please have the picture in your mind. We're talking about adding two weft threads, because that's where you add. You can't add to the warp, obviously. The warp's already in place. There's no way for you to add to the width of the cloth. You could just keep adding to the length of the cloth because you're adding weft threads that you're throwing through with the shuttle, right? So throwing through a shuttle, and you're saying, if I do that twice, you didn't tell me how many warp threads you're going to be doing it twice to. Are we talking about 1,000 warp threads? Are we talking about 3 warp threads? Actually, it isn't a function of threads. It's a function of width of material. So normally the shear is the sit hakaful. Remember that the sit is the difference between the first two fingers. The sit hakaful is double that. Now that would be, I don't care. Obviously that may be 100 threads. I mean, it depends how high the quality of the linen is. If you take a look at you're out to buy really high quality sheets, they will always tell you how many warp threads there are. It always says so on the thing, because otherwise you can get away. They'll get away with selling you cotton sheets. But those cotton sheets, if you hold them up to the light, you're basically looking at a net. You have very few threads per square inch. So the really silky and wonderful type of weaves are very, very fine threads in which you may have 250 and sometimes even 400 threads per square inch. per inch, I should say. And therefore, the Mishnah does not give its measurement in terms of the number of threads. It gives the measurement in terms of the shear of the material. Now, normally, the shear is the sita kaful. So the chiddush of what we're saying over here in the end of the Mishnah is that if you get up to the edge, then, now what is the edge? You're familiar, I'm sure, if you've ever gone to actually have a suit made instead of buying one off of the rack. So they've taken down a bolt of material, right? You take a look at the bolt of material, and at either side of the warp of the material, which will be, you know, the material may be, I don't know, 50 yards long. Let's say it's a meter and a half wide. At either side of the meter and a half wide, there is selvedge. Selvedge is a thicker edging, which is usually used in different colors, and they actually usually put in the name of the manufacturer along it in a little piece on the side. It is a thin strip of normally colored or marked material, which keeps everything together, because that way, if the warp threads are themselves fine and they need to be careful that they don't end up getting, when you move the bolt, they don't end up getting torn because you've stacked them in the store and so on, they put a selvedge. That selvedge is called over here the safa, which is just the edge of the selvedge. The word selvedge originally came from self-closing edge, so self-sealing edge, because you were using a different thread at the edge. In any event, the edge, that's why in England they spell selvedge as selvedge, E-D-G-E, at the end. In America, it became one word, A-G-E, selvedge, which loses the whole meaning of what it was, which is normal in America. So anyway, the idea of having a selvedge is that there you do not need the seat, because the selvedge has its own chashivas, and over there you would be chayev even if it was only berochav shlosha batei nirim. So only three heddles wide, because a selvedge is usually made just as a thin edging, even though it's not the normal size of the sita kaful, but the very fact that it's a selvedge gives it chashivas. You know, imagine, a guy wants to do a woven belt, right? So the belt is only an inch wide, maybe. Are we going to say that you're potter because it wasn't a sita kaful? Obviously not. That's what you're weaving. So alamaze dome, lo'oreitzitzu katan. If you would like to make a thin belt or a ribbon, so over there, you're chayev, even though it's not a sita kaful. So there, too, we say the minimum shear would be shnei chutim rochav shlosha batei nirim. There, in fact, we actually do think about the number of threads of warp that you're covering, because that's what counts. And in that case, you would be chayev with very much less than a sita kaful. V'ha'orek shlosha chutim batchila. Now, you said that in the Braita, you said three at the beginning, or one on the Oreg Yerchayev. That obviously is going like Rebbe Eliezer. I mean, that's Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnah. Even though over here in the Braita it says it's Stam, this must be a Stam Braita like Rebbe Eliezer. Now, there's another Braita that says, Ha'orek Shnei Chutim Al Hagas. If you add two chutim on a piece that already exists, a large piece of fabric, or if you add it on the Imra, you're putting a new fabric together over here, and you put two threads getting it started. Now, what that is similar to the selvedge, which runs along the warp. What we also do is we create a thicker edge to keep things tight at the beginning, and that is the utilizing a different type of weft. So what they do at the beginning is they'll use a thicker, stronger thread to make sure the material won't come apart when you start it off. And therefore, if you put it on the Imra, we mentioned that separately, that the din over there, you might think is different than if you just are moving along. It's not. It's the same shear, even on the Imra, where Rebbe Eliezer says you'd be chayev even adding one thread. And if it's on the edge, then shnei chutim rochav shlosha batenirin yirchayev, halamaz adom alorek sitzur koton, shnei chutim rochav shlosha batenirin, which we just explained. And that would mean that this braita, which says, even if you have a gas, you have an existing piece, which is big, of woven fabric over here, you still need two threads. Or ala imra, your chayav. This obviously is stama karabanan. So we have two brises, one of which pretends the Tanakama is stama. But the first one was Rabbi Eliezer was a Tanakama. And over here, which mentions stama, the rabbanan were the Tanakama. Haose shnei botei nirin. Now, the question is like this. You say, Haose, let's read the Mishnah together. Hose shnei batei nirin. So we read it like Hose shnei batei nirin, whether it's benirin, bekiros, or so on, right? But put together the words Hose shnei batei nirin benirin. What does that mean? If you make two batei nirin with nirin, so how does that make sense? Omer Abaye, this is how Rashi learns. It's like at least 10 different pshatim in understanding this. Rashi's pshat is very, very straightforward. Rashi says like this. It means that you take each one of the threads. I won't call them threads. I'll call them ropes, because otherwise you get it mixed up with the warp threads. Okay, so you've got the let's turn them into little metal pieces, right? Okay, but now ropes are better. String. That's what I'm looking for. Okay, so you've got strings hanging down off of the pole, right? So what we talked about before, when we were talking about a regular nearing, is that you take each one of those strings, you wrap it around one of the warp threads, and then you tie a little loop in it to keep that particular thread. Then you take another one, skip a thread, and wrap the next string around thread number three, and you loop it, you skip a thread, go to thread number five, take a string, loop it until you've got your 50 threads or 100 threads, whatever you want on that pole, then you take the alternate threads on the next pole, right? But there's another way of doing this, which is a little bit more efficient. And what that does is like this. It takes a string, it moves the string around threads one and three. So it goes once around thread one, wraps around itself, comes back down, goes around thread three, and then it ties itself on the top around itself. So that way it's just a little bit faster that it gets every alternate thread. So over there is what we were referring to. It means tarte babate nira. It's where each one of the strings is wrapped twice around a warp, warp one and warp three, and then chodeb nira, and then one time it's tied to itself at the top. That's what it means. So that's also considered to be shnei batei nirin, even though you're using it with one nira. And then when you say in the keirus, what exactly is a keirus? A keirus, says Rav, is a mitsuvita. That is not the name of a Japanese car. It's actually a frame for the heddle. And that is, it's called a heddle frame, actually. So a mitsuvita is that which holds in place. So it will hold permanently. Over there, you'll have these thin metal wires with a little loop in them, and each warp thread goes through one of those loops. I don't care how you do it, but if you're setting up two of these for being able to go up and down with your weaving, pow, that is the chiyuv, even though you haven't woven. So that's the chiyuv on Shabbos of oseh batei nirin, setting up the warp. By the way, it is so beautiful to watch people doing this. It's really worth your taking 3 minutes and getting onto YouTube and seeing how people do this in their homes. There's so many hundreds of thousands of people who love to do weaving at home. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to relax, better than knitting. It's very, very complex. And so it really, you got to keep your mind on, and especially if you're going to be making different types of beautiful designs and so on. It gets more and more complicated. And you can spend hours just setting up the batei nirin. Now, don't think you have to do hours on YouTube, because when they do it on YouTube, they speed it up so you watch 3 hours worth in about 5 seconds, which is beautiful. And you really get a fantastic sense of how much work goes into a CS batei nirin. You get a real feeling for the malacha. I would strongly recommend taking a look at a couple of different YouTubes till you find one that really does it nice. Okay, so the next thing we went into was tefirot. Hatofer shtei tefirot. Now, what are you adding? I mean, I understand what you're adding when you talked about Ore, because, wow, that was very complicated. I mean, you had to add, you know, is it at the beginning? Is it at the Safad? Is it Reb Eliezer? Is it the Chachomim? Okay, that Mishnah is justified. But this piece It said back in Klaugod, all exactly those words. You're not adding anything. You are. I'll tell you why. Because you want to tell me the next piece, which is tearing Almanat Litfor Shtei Tfirot. So because of that, you mentioned the sewing. What? It says that part back in Klaugod too. What's wrong with you? Those were also listed immediately after Tofer back in Klaugod. No, I mean, the end is that, which is the next Mishnah, is the Sefer of this Mishnah, that if somebody tears things because he is angry, so he tears his begadim, or he tears for someone who died, for his avelut, and we want to talk about what the din is over there, so it introduces the sugya of, that's what I meant when I said it wants to talk about tearing. I didn't mean it's coming to tell me the din of tearing, but since it wants to tell me a prat din of why you're tearing, so it needed to mention tearing as a malacha. So in order to mention tearing as a malacha, it mentioned already the tefira, and then it got into akorea, and then why you're being korea. That's what I meant when I think I'm stupid. Okay, so now it says over there, korea amanat litfar shtei tefirot. What does that mean? Why would you tear out an existing stitch in order to sew it again? That's weird. I mean, would they do that in the Mishkan? Well, of course, it's very simple. Suppose somebody had sewn. This happens, by the way, in washing very often. Very often, the threads that are used for sewing a tablecloth, let's say, are made out of cotton or linen, and the tablecloth itself is made out of polyester, and then it's put into a dryer or a wash that's too hot, and that pulls the threads that are made out of cotton because they shrink. And now you're left with a tablecloth that's all buckled up at the edges because of the fact that it's the avda kikista. It made a lot of little pockets. So whenever you have sewing that is too tight, the material can't be stretched out smoothly. It turns out to have like little pockets in it. And therefore, you need to tear out those threads and sew in new threads. So that could happen on the tefira of the Mishkan also. So because of that, any type of tikkun of a tefira that requires tearing out the old one is exactly that shear. And this brings us to yet again another exciting episode of our Capitan, this time well-prepared. Barnea wants to shut up the Capitan for some reason. I don't know, Rich, you want to put up with this or not? Maybe Barnea wanted to do it himself instead. He's getting frustrated. I
did not want to take the wind out of Richie's sails. I just wanted to say that in ancient looms, there are loom weights, which would hold down each one of the strings. And it's very common in archaeological finds from thousands of years ago and the new ones like at Masada. And currently, it's a view, and currently it's a simon of where are there women? It was assumed that it was generally done by women. So when you find loom weights, it means women are there. And it's, for example, areas of Masada without loom weights, we say, that's where they were celibate, the rebels, and there were no women there. So we look for it all the time.
Which is a very strong archaeological proof of things, as you'll note. Only women use stones. Yeah. In our terms, it would be a... only woman would hit you over the head with a rolling pin. So if there's a rolling pin there, it's a raya. There must have been women. Archaeology hasn't changed much, as you see.
Okay, it's a well-woven argument. That's it. Okay. Barnea is always looming. You have to be careful.
Okay. Don't try to get into Barnea's turf, Moshe.
Warped mind.
Now you've done it. Okay, Rich, move it. that one was worth waiting for, Rich. Hakorea bakamato. So somebody is angry, and he's trying to express his anger by tearing his clothes. Or almeto. For that matter, anybody who does things in a destructive fashion, that is not considered to be a malacha, because a malacha is, by definition, defined as something that is a tikkun in what you're doing. V'hamekalkel al menat letaken, but if what you're doing is in order to enable you to fix things properly, like we just had before, then the shiur is the metaken, like the case of Korea, almanat litfor. And it's always going to be the same shiur as the malacha as initially given. Now, all of the various malachas that you would do that are associated with ariga, and therefore associated with the creation of the threads or the whitening of the threads that you'll be using for your ariga, they're all the same shear. Because whether you're doing washing, which is the melamein, you're doing the raw wool, you're doing the minapet, so you're detangling them, or whether you're dyeing them, or whether you're spinning them into threads, it's the same shear. Kimlo rochav asit akaful, it is the double seat. And oreik shnei chutim, shiuro kimlo asit. If you're weaving them, then the shear would be, even though it's not across the whole piece, remember. Maybe the piece is 20 sitim long, but you would be chayev for the ariga of shnei chutim, even if it was only kimlo asit. Fine. Now, Raminu, there's a stira here. Because it says in the Braita, HaKorea b'chamato be'evlo v'almito, there's someone who tears because he's angry, or he's an ovel, and he tears on his mate. There he's chayev, even though he's mechalel Shabbos, but he was yotze his chayev of being Korea on the mate. So why does our Mishnah say that you're potter in those circumstances? What we're going to do is we're going to pretend that we don't have a contradiction about the first word, which is angry. Angry is going to be a problem, but we focus only on the last case, on a death in the family. So if it's said in the two cases, in one case you're chayev for kriya, in the other case you're putter, then it would be very simple. I mean, the bright is talking about where the person lost a member of his family, and he's chayev to do the kriya. So that's a constructive thing, maybe because he is being yotze a mitzvah, or maybe because he won't be able to wear this beged if he's an avel unless he had torn it. So for him, it's a tikkun. This is a whole discussion in Tosfos, whether we view the mitzvah per se. We're going to see later on that question will be coming up. And the other one in the Mishnah was talking about hearing bad news about a friend that died, you know? So that's a mate, the alman over there. There's no chiyav of kriya. And therefore, you're just doing something that's destructive. But the Mishnah said his own dead, meito. No, meito may mean it's a relative, yes. Somebody close, but not somebody that is chiyav on avelut. So there's only those seven people that you're chayev on avilut. So they're not chayev on avilut. Well, what's the difference? I mean, if the guy who died is a chacham, even if it's not his rebbe, the din is that he's chayev to be korea detanya chacham shemet hakol krovav. It says everybody is related to a talmud chacham who died. And what does that mean? Hakol krovav? Nobody. Relative means hakol kikrovav, which means hakol korim alav. Everyone is chayev to do kriya. Hakol choltzin alav. They used to tear the clothing at the shoulders, which was the way in Rome that you showed also the nature of avelut. Everyone would bare their shoulders. Hakol mavrim alav berchava. They would all eat a su'udat avara in the rechava when everybody stood. The way back from the funeral, they would bring food for everyone as if they were all avelum. So, I mean, even if it's not a relative. Okay, he wasn't a chacham. Come on, man. He wasn't a chacham. Okay, well, even if he's not a chacham, I mean, if he's a good man, he's an adam kosher, you're also chayev to tear, no? The Tanya. Why would a person lose a child when they're young? So that he will learn to cry for a good person. What are you, crazy? What, you're telling me we're gonna take a ravon, we're gonna take a security from a person, or take his child so that he can learn? That's nutty. Of course it can't mean that. No, it means b'nei shelo b'chavi tabel al adam kasher. If a person, chas v'sholem, had a chait that could have been geirin, that he should lose a child, if he had been careful to be misabel on the loss of the life of a person who's a decent, upright person. So then, the Midas HaDin will not punish him. But since that person did not do that, Shekola Bochel Adam Kasher Mochelin Lo HaKol Avonotav, somebody who cries about a good person that died, that is enough to get rid of all of his averas. Bishvil Kavod Sha'asa. So if he didn't do that and he didn't get rid of his averas, so then if we're saying, how did this person get this terrible punishment? Must be that Midas HaDin found something to hang on him. Must be because he had not cried over an Adam Kosher, which would have been mechaper on all of his avinas. So if he doesn't value life, so then the Mida Keneged Mida works out in this way. Okay, so what's your problem? So the friend that died was a bum, okay? He wasn't an Adam Kosher. I understand what your problem. So he wasn't an Adam Kosher. Ah, but even if he's not an Adam Kosher, we're going to find out every possible way here that you would be chayev in Kriya for someone who is not a relative. So he's a friend, he's not a Talmud Chacham, he's not a good person. Yes, but if you were there at the time that he died, you would also be chayef to be Korea. Because doesn't Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar say, Ha'omed al ha-meit b'sha'at yitziyat neshama, chayef likroa, somebody who's standing at the side of someone who is nifter, he has to tear his begonim, even though he doesn't even know the guy. This is like watching a Sefer Torah being burnt up. And why is that? Because as Rashi explains, during this person's lifetime, you're looking at an individual. He is alive. He at this moment could be learning Kol HaTorah Kula, and you're watching that potential burn up in his death. So that's like watching the Sefer Torah being burnt. So why don't you have to be Korea? Okay, you've made your point. The Mishnah is talking about, he's not a relative. He's not a Talmud Chacham. He's not even a decent human being. And you were not there b'shas yitzias neshama. Okay? So that's the difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And meanwhile, you made your point. By the way, there's an astonishing Maharal who reports this in a couple of places in the Maharal, where the Maharal says that you see from this Gemara that if you watch someone who's going to yeshiva to learn, that you have to tear your clothing. Why? Because it says over here, Halamazah domela sefer Torah shenisraf. And Rashi says that as long as this person was alive, he could have been learning Kol HaTorah Kula, and now seeing him die is knowing that he will never learn Kol HaTorah Kula. Well, it's exactly the same thing, says the Maharal. Before this guy went to yeshiva, he could have actually ended up knowing Kol HaTorah Kula and being an Adam Chacham and so on. The moment he walks into yeshiva, you know for sure he's never going to know a damn thing. And therefore, it's basically watching, as Mamish, this is Maharal's Lashon, it's not me, and it's not in one place either. And therefore, he says, Kimat, I hold this to be true, la halacha. That's what he says, Kimat, I hold it true, la halacha, that you're mechuyev to tear your clothing if he is sent. Now, just imagine the kind of schools people send their kids to today, where you know they're never going to know anything. So that it's a chiyuv in kriyat begadav. Anyway, one second, gentlemen. Let me just, I don't have to break for a moment.
You have to be there much earlier. Good Shabbos, everybody.
No, I turned off the camera. Okay.
Shabbos, Sikora.
Good Shabbos, everybody. Good Chodesh.
It's the yard site. We're learning for the yard site of Tzipora's father. So.
Okay. Anyways, I have to pick him up by 11:40.
Okay, sure.
So I'll see you later.
Everybody's waving. Okay.
Bye. Good
Shabbos. Good Shabbos. Fine. All right. So now we understand what you've done. Yeah, it's all very nice, but you didn't deal with the issue, for heaven's sakes. You dealt with the contradiction in terms of tearing on a mate, but you didn't deal with the contradiction of tearing when you're angry. It's the same contradiction. How are you going to explain that? So, Tenach Meito, how are you going to answer the contradiction of Chabato HaChamato? That's a problem, isn't it? No, it's also not a problem. Because it depends. The Braita that says your Chayev is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if it's a Malacha Sheina Tzricha Legufa, you're saying, I'm not accomplishing anything. You're not accomplishing anything. So, and it's not creative. So then you should be potter. But remember, the Rebbe Yehuda holds that even if what you're doing is not creative in the sense that you'd rather not have the problem in the first place, you're still chayev. And the Mishnah that says you're potter is going on to Rebbe Shimon, who holds that Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is potter. Now let me explain it to you. Rebbe Yehuda, Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa chayev aleha. And her Rebbe Shimon, the Mishnah is Rebbe Shimon, Yom HaMalach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa potter aleha. Says the Gemara, that's not enough to answer. I'm sorry. Because even Rebbe Yehuda, who says, Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. Okay, that would be like there's a mate in the courtyard and you move the mate out on Shabbos carrying the body, right? Okay, that's where he said his din, Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. But that's because at least what you're doing is mitaken. Rebbe Yehuda never said that if the act per se is destructive, that you would also be chayiv. And over here, the act is destructive. I understand. The guy's sitting there tearing up his clothes. I mean, how could that be chayiv? Rebbe Yehuda, it's not true. That's very constructive. Doesn't it make you feel better? Yeah. So you were fuming angry, and now you're tearing all things. You're breaking dishes. And that was good. So it's very good for your psychology, and therefore your Ovid Nachas Ruach L'Yitzro. Don't you want to make your Yetzer Hara feel good and relaxed? So good. So that's Mitakein. What? How could that be Mitakein? You're not even allowed to do that. So it's certainly not a good thing. Gai Gav Nemishari, you can't even act that way. Vatanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Mishum Chilfa bar Agra, Shamra Mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Somebody who is tearing his clothes because he's angry, or he's breaking dishes because he's angry, or he's throwing his money around because he's angry and he's throwing it out the window. It's a great way to make money, by the way. You just got to find the right people at the right time. Then Yehebe Necha Ka'oved Avodah Zorah. A guy like that, for all intents and purposes, you should see him as already joining the church. Shekachu Manato Shel HaYetzirah. That's the way the Yetzirah works, you know. Today it's, well, the Gemara says you should do a little Nachas Ruach to your Yetzirah, you know. Give me something. Get a little angry. Yeah, that's today. Tomorrow, it's why not rob the bank? And the day after that, it's why not join the church? Once you get used to listening to the guy who's giving the orders, then there's no limit to the orders. Rabbi Oven, you see this in a pasuk. It says, Lo yebcha el zar, velo tishtachave le'el nechar. So, what does that mean? You should not have an alien god inside of you, and don't bow down to some god that's outside of you. What's the god that's inside of you? I mean, how do you can't bow down to what's inside of you. Ah, there is indeed an Elzar inside of you. That's your Yetzer Hara. In any event, doing Nachas Ruach to your Yetzer Hara can by no stretch of the imagination be viewed as something constructive. So what's the case? Well, the case is sometimes you need, and this the Rambam talks about, remember, sometimes you need to make an impression as if you're angry. So you got to go through the motions of being angry, right? So you put on this whole big show of tearing your clothes or throwing the dishes or whatever, and that'll make sure that your wife will never make cold coffee again. So what we're talking about over here is the Ka'avid Lemirma Emta Ainche Beite. You're trying to strike fear into the hearts of the people that are misbehaving. Ki'oda Rebuta, what Rebuta used to do is he would tear off the mitzvah, he would tear off the border of a piece of clothing, or simply tear it back on, sew it right back on, it's a seam. Revachu bar Yaakov, he would throw things, break the dishes, but they were already broken. So he kept a stack of broken dishes that made it look like he was furious. Crash, bang, oh my God, whoa, Dad's going nuts. Okay, and Rav Sheshes had a great idea, which those of you who have been with me for 40 years or more will remember was used by Rav Avi in the yeshiva, and he would throw fish brine at the head of his misbehaving maids, which Rabavi used to shoot from a little squirt gun on people who fell asleep in his shir. And Rabbi Abba, Tovar Nachtema, Rabbi Abba would break the lid off of a pitcher, which is a small replaceable thing. Anyway, so over there, it is very constructive because you really are trying to achieve something with it.